Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Team Fight Talk Show, the only Team Fight Tactics talk show that I'm on, and I don't know if that means anything at all, but either way, I'm joined, as always, by my constant Team Fight Talk Show co-host, Froden. How's it going, Froden?
It's great. Travis with the hard-hitting facts. Can't really refute them.
You know, I try to figure out ways to promote the show as best I can. I'm not the best marketing professional.
That's right. That's a great tagline to the show. Team Fight Talk Show, the only show that Travis is on featuring.
Yes, exactly. Regarding Team Fight.
Tactics. I'm doing great. I kind of hit my goal earlier in the expansion or the set from Hidden Masters. So I climbed the second count to Masters. I tried to do in as few as games possible. So got there in around like 80 games. It took a little longer than I'd like, but
I see we're starting with a humble brag today. That's how we're kicking off.
That's how much I enjoyed the previous patch, Travis, because we do the show every other week. And I got to say, the previous patch was probably my favorite thus far of the set. I know it's a little bit contentious. Some people think that it's probably the worst set of patches in the set, but I personally enjoyed it a lot. And I can't wait to talk about what we got for today because all that big news for the mid set 3.5.
I think what's really cool about this patch is that I kind of started to realize, and I don't know if anybody else has caught up, that slow rolling might be better than hyper rolling. It's a little discovery I've made. I don't know if anybody else has figured that one out yet. But either way, speaking of something completely unconnected to what I was just talking about, Mismatched Sox is here. Mismatched Sox, how you doing?
Oh, pretty good. I'm super excited to be part of the only Team Fight talk show that Travis is on.
Thank you. Yes, exactly.
The joke is that there's also another really, really scuffed podcast that Raiders hosts. He hosted, I think, every Saturday at 1 a.m. PST. And it's just, like 24 of the top challenger players who are just, who can't come to an agreement about anything in TFT.
Oh, yeah. It's great. Nice. It's real sweaty hours. It's like 1 a.m. They get all the biggest TFT grinders all in the same room, and they all just keep interrupting each other after like five words.
You know, it only took 2 minutes for you to start promoting a competing product to the one that you're on right now.
No, this is, trust me, this is not a competing product. It is not a competing product.
Well, either way, it's great to have you on, and I'm glad we're doing this. You know, sometimes I'm a little bummed we only do this every other week, but I always enjoy the fact that there's just always something hype to talk about because we do it this way. So, but Sox, how you been? What's going on? What's kind of your story for people that don't know about you as a streamer, as a competitor in Team Fight Tactics?
I guess let's go all the way back to the Dota Auto Chess days. So I played Dota Auto Chess at the time. I was pretty decent. I eventually reached Queen because of some technicalities in Dota Auto Chess. So then they allowed everyone to reach Queen. Mm-hmm. So I was able to reach Queen, and then pretty much Dota Auto Chess disappeared. So I transferred to Teamfight Tactics. I was always kind of a highly rated player. I peaked at rank 1 in set 1. But I could never really make that breakthrough of being a really well recognized, a really dominant TFT player. So I hit rank 1 for a day, and then I dropped out. But in set 2, I really picked up and tried to reinforce what I've learned from set 1 and try to get better. And I was able to finish rank 1 and 2 in set 2. And then similarly, just a few days ago, I was able to hit rank 1 and 2 in set 3 as well. So
nice. That's really exciting. Congratulations. You know, what's interesting to me about that story is you're like, I switched to Team Fight Tactics because Auto Chess died. If Auto Chess was still going, would you still be playing that game over TFT?
I think I would have tried TFT eventually. And honestly, TFT is a way superior game. There's no way I would go back to Auto Chess. Team Fight Tactics has way more decision making. Your decision making is way more impactful. And I think there's way less RNG. So.
Ooh. Those are pretty contentious statement.
those are pretty bold claims for sure.
Yeah.
Well, how's everything been for you in set 3? How you been enjoying it? And also, how's sort of the being a personality and a competitor in the scene been for you in set 3?
At the beginning of set 3, I didn't really like it that much because I thought, positioning really didn't matter. As I played more and more of set 3, I realized that positioning does matter, just in a different way than set 2.
Gotcha.
So you have to think about the scenarios you have to position for in set 3, rather than positioning against one person in particular in set 3. And then for being a streamer and like a competitor, to be honest, I was really never into like trying to make it big on Twitch. I think like streaming is just a second thought. My goal is just to be the best TFT player of all time. It has nothing to do with, like, I don't care how many Twitch viewers I get if I'm the best. If I'm the best, I can get one viewer and I'll be happy, right? So that's my
goal. You could be becoming the best without streaming at all.
Yeah, no, but the thing is that it's a little, that's not necessarily true because you don't get invited to a lot of the tournaments if you're not a streamer. I was actually declined from several tournament invitations just because my stream wasn't big enough at that point. So streaming is actually kind of
name shame anybody.
What name shame anyone? No, like, careful. Like I wasn't invited for the Starside Invitational.
That's true.
And it was a little bit disappointing, right? But at that time, my stream wasn't super big, so it's understandable.
So it sounds like that's a lot of your motivation is actually just growing your stream so that you can have enough of a position in the community to make it into more tournaments.
Yeah, so that is a big enough concern. Also, if you want to get invited to any team, say you want to be part of any org, Team Liquid, Cloud9, Golden Guardians, you actually need to put in some stream hours. It's literally required. You cannot get a contract without stream numbers right now. So
yeah,
that's also a concern as well.
Is that a goal for you, joining one of these teams?
Eventually, I think most TFT players have a goal similar to that. So,
gotcha.
It is cool.
Well, I don't want to hog all the questions, Fred. And if you have any for him as well, before we get into the patch and everything.
In terms of like general stuff, it's kind of known that you balance a full time job, and you also do a bunch of coding stuff, but you also play TFT a lot. Is your aspiration eventually to, you know, make TFT like the thing you do, or do you still plan on kind of splitting your attention between work as well as competing?
Absolutely not. There's no way I'd be a full-time TFT player or like a full-time TFT streamer. My work pays me way too much, and I would never get paid close enough as a TFT player or a TFT streamer. And honestly, I really enjoy coding, and I think it's like something to, what is it, like, to take a break from TFT, sometimes you have to do something completely unrelated. In this case, working and coding is something, that's something for me, right? So all my off work time I can dedicate towards TFT because I have a mental refresher in the fact that I have to go to work sometimes.
Are you worried?
Follow-up question to that.
Oh, go ahead.
How aware are your coworkers and colleagues about, you know, your moonlight?
No. My coworkers are super supportive. They're some of the original people who actually supported me in starting like streaming, for example. They all know I play TFT. They all know that I'm like really high ranked at TFT. My boss knows. A lot of my coworkers actually started playing a little bit of TFT because they were interested in my stream. So they're all very, very supportive.
So you say you want to be the best TFT player in the world, but I mean, you're potentially at a very big disadvantage if other people are able to do this full time, and you've decided you want to balance a full time job with
this. That's absolutely not true because playing 12 hours a day really doesn't improve your gameplay. You can't really focus for more than like 2 or 3 hours a day. I really think that, and like a really good example of this is H221. I think he used to play about 12 hours a day, and he would be hard stuck about 500 LP. And just for like the last 2 weeks, he's only played about 3 or 4 hours a day, and he's skyrocketed all the way to 1200 LP. And I mean, you can say that it's due to some other factors, but a big factor is the fact that he's playing less hours than he used to be. Mm-hmm. So it's absolutely not a disadvantage.
You know what's strange is I only play like 2 hours a day. And I'm still garbage, so I don't know. You would think I'd be in a great place if less is more.
Well, it's not just less is more, right? There's a lot of factors that goes into it.
Right.
Yeah. I'm just teasing.
For sure, well, the same actually does apply to because people obviously know that I cast a lot of Hearthstone stuff too. It's the same with a lot of those top players too. After a certain point on the initial learning curve, there's just such little diminishing returns for grinding more that actually kind of starts to actively detriment your results. So you need to actually have some separation. So a lot of strategies that players used to use to qualify was to only play for 1 hour. And then there was like a mandatory 1 hour break. And then they have to play for another hour. So that way, when they sit down, they're hyper focused. on like every single play and decision. And I think you kind of sense that too, especially if you stream, right? Like, how hard is it to stay focused for like 6 hours while balancing backseat gaming with your chat?
I mean, really I personally like backseat gamers, but that's a talk, I guess, of another time. I have a lot of reasons why I do like backseat gamers, but regardless of backseat gamers, when I stream, I'm hyper-focused. If I'm not hyper-focused, I just don't stream, or I just end stream, so... Mm.
Well, I want to get into the mid-season patch, but I'm super curious, just really quickly, can you give why you like backseat gamers? Because I feel like that's a unconventional take.
Okay, so my reason is, you know how I come up with a lot of unique and new strategies, such as slow rolling or backlining your units?
Yeah.
I didn't necessarily think of all that strategy by copying other top-tier players. Almost all of those like new and undiscovered strategies are just from random people who just suggested something that that was kind of silly, and I thought about it, and I was like, wait, they're totally correct. Like, how slow rolling came to happen, and how I started playing it, and how I started making the dominant strategy is a very, very silly story. Let me tell it right now, I guess, since...
Sure.
So, this was about 3 weeks ago, and I was playing TFT with my friends. And one of my friends, she's really new to the game. She's got like 6 or 7 games under her belt. And our lobby had like, there was like 2 master players, and there was like a diamond player. And she was asking to get slaughtered, right? So then she asked me to just give her some tips. And I told her how to play reroll Shredder. And I told her at 3-1, roll down for the following units: Caitlyn, Zaya, Jarvan, and Fiora. And she couldn't recognize the units in time. And I told her, roll all the way down to 0 gold. She started with about 65 gold. She ended up with about 43 gold. And then the round was over. And I was like, okay, it's okay. Just from the rest of the rounds, just roll above 50 and look for those 4 units. And at 4-1, she hit 3-star of all the units with about 30 gold left. And I was like, okay, well, that's a high roll. You obviously played it wrong. So, like, you just high rolled. I mean, like, it happens to everyone. It's just beginner luck. And then we played the same game again, and she did the exact same thing. And she hit all 4 units 3-starred at 4-1. And I was like, wait, this might be better. So then I started trying it on my Smurf. And I was like, wait, this is way better. I can't believe people have been, like, autopiloting this for so long. And I did the math on it, and it was way, way, way better. And I was just mind blown. I was just like, how are people this dumb, right? How are people this dumb? How did they not realize that slowing is so much better? So a lot of my new innovative ideas actually come from really humble beginnings. And that's what happens, right?
That's awesome. That's such a cool story.
Really cool.
And if you don't have backseat gamers, you never make those decisions. It's just impossible because you're so tunneled on what you think is right without taking into account.
Yeah.
Like, what's actually right?
Well, I really appreciate that story. I think it's really good. And I know that for those that have missed it, you can go find on the competitive TFT subreddit a thread where Sox basically breaks down and does analysis on slow rolling versus hyper rolling. And it's got some good stuff in there. I know we have it up on the screen right now. But yeah, go check it out. It's called Slow Rolling versus Hyper Rolling Simulation Based Analysis. I say that 5 times fast. And you'll find it on the subreddit, and it's got a pretty good breakdown on it. So either way, very cool. And it's neat. I always think it's neat that in this game, you know, one person can just change the meta so much by having just some revelation like this. And I really credit your friend who's played 6 or 7 games with discovering That's this. Right. I think it's fantastic that she learned that.
I think it's such an interesting example of just how people they're playing too much and thinking too little, just in general. That, you know, something as basic as that, which is like maybe you don't always roll your gold down at 3-1, is such a revolutionary concept. But, you know, it's kind of one of those things where people really want the result and they're not really thinking about the inputs that go into it. It's so prevalent.
I mean, you say that, but this one's not super obvious, right? It's not super obvious just from glancing on it. Back in my Dota Auto Chess days, this is actually my friend in the chat right now. His name is Akiva. He taught me something so basic that people don't even think about. And like, it's so embarrassing that I couldn't think of it when I was playing my Dota Auto Chess days. And like, I see people making these mistakes, and it's like the most basic mistake. And I just see people making it all the time, even like high challenger players. And this is so stupid. I don't know if you guys are familiar with Dota Auto Chess.
Yeah.
But it's the
idea. I got to almost quit.
Okay, it's the idea of frontline versus backline. So back when I was playing Dota Auto Chess, in the early days, I used to value two-star units a lot. So I had a board where I was coaching my friend because he wanted to learn. I had a board where I had three frontline warrior units, so three frontline vanguards equivalent in TFT, and I had no damage units. And I was like, oh, you play these two vanguard, or you play these two vanguards because it gives you the vanguard synergy, and they're all two star. And then we lost the fight because we had no DPS, and the enemy team just killed our units faster than we can kill theirs. And I was like, oh, we can't do anything about it. There's nothing we can do. You just have to wait to level to put in a DPS unit. And he's just like, wait, why don't you just put in a DPS unit? And I just tell him it's because it's a one-star unit. And at that time, there's a unit called Razor, and it's really OP. If you know from like Dota Auto Chess, unit goes like, Razor!
Yeah.
It's really OP. Even if it's a one-star unit, it's like a super high DPS unit. And he's like, why don't you just put it in? I'm just like, no, you can't put it in. It's a one-star unit. It can't compare to a two-star unit. And then he's just like, bro, we need damage. And at that point, I realized that like he was like a midnight player, and I was a high queen player. And he was completely right, and I was completely wrong. And I'm just so stupid that like I didn't mean to think about this. And like that's when I realized essentially backseat gamers are essentially more right than wrong.
And, I'm so excited to use this knowledge to backseat so many Twitch streamers now and tell them I know more than you, even though your rank is so much higher. This is great. Thank you, Socks.
Anyway, so right. We put Razor in, we want every single fight from there. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Anyway, so let's. We're getting lost, and I can listen to these Auto Chess stories forever. But really quickly, I don't want to spend too much time on the patch that hit today because it's pretty tiny compared to the patch that's coming out soon. But is there anything interesting in this patch that either of you are excited about or that you think is good or you think is fantastic? Obviously, there's a new galaxy, but generally speaking, just what do you guys think about this patch?
I mean, the new galaxy is definitely something to look at because galaxies is like the main feature of, you know, this new set expansion. Little or Legends is... Like, a lot of people were already expecting it to just be awful, right? Because they're saying, like, oh, you know, with only, like, 80, 85 health or so, we're just going to die before we can get our compositions online. I haven't really got a chance. I've been actually spending most of my day playing PvE. But I understand where they're coming from. But at the same time, like, it's kind of interesting to think about what strategies might become more viable. Like, maybe ecoing just isn't really a thing in that that galaxy. You just have to, like, play as if 30 is your max interest gold type of thing, and I like evaluating stuff. So I guess my first thing would be like just give it some time and see if strategies develop, because we always say the same thing, right? When it's really different, we're like, this is bad because this is the conventional rules we play from, and then we learn how to play like that galaxy, and then maybe some, you know, tier list shifts around. So I want to see how it ends up shaking out, even though I hold my judgments for later, because I can foresee this being a galaxy that most people roll their eyes for when they see it.
Yeah, I don't like it just based on, I haven't played it, but I already don't like it. I'm right there with you. All those people out there, Froden's criticizing. Sock.
I'm personally super excited for Little Legends. I think it can develop some new strategies. But the one I'm really excited about is the Infiltrator change. I think with the new Infiltrator change, I think there will be a lot more counterplay. Some people suggest that Infiltrators could be dead, which is a possibility, but I still think the fact that there's more counterplay warrants this test, because if they're quote-unquote dead, you can always buff their numbers, right? But at the moment, there's almost no counterplay to Infiltrators jumping onto your backline.
Yeah. Well, we'll have to see how that plays out, but let's talk about the real exciting news, which is the stuff that's on the PBE right now, and that's the mid-set expansion. I know we're going to probably spend the majority of the show on this, so let's dive right into it. I don't know. It looks like we're getting up on the screen. Froden, where should we start on this? Because it just feels like there's so much to dive into.
Yeah, so let's start with what they're taking out. They're taking out all the Valkyries and the Voids. I think they cited specifically, obviously Voids right now, very powerful. The Kha'Zix composition that started really surfacing, started dominating a lot of lobbies, and once more, because it's a one-cost carry composition, multiple people can go for it, and therefore you also saw top fours primarily dominated through compositions that played Kha'Zix, Void, Brawlers, or Zaya shredders, or maybe they just like spiked some kind of Kale or Jinx composition. So there's a lot of complaints about it, but voids are completely out, which is sad because I think Cho'Gath is one of my favorite units ever in TFT, and I think it's a pretty fun unit. But that's well, I'm excited that
excited about what's coming back in, but we'll get to that in a second. Yeah. I'm fine losing Cho'Gath. That means we get Gnar.
They said that I love Gnar too. The Valkyries were just a little bit too dominant what they did, which was the damage part of it, especially when they hit their peak power. So obviously Kale has been a very strong unit since the beginning of the set, basically. Misfortune's just been super dominant and problematic for a lot of times. And then Kai'Sa, when you itemize her correctly, is extremely oppressive with Demolition to Spat. Which, by the way, they also changed some of those items, too. Like, Demo Spat isn't really a thing anymore, which is also a very good change for the game, I think. So with all these new units coming, like being removed, including Kassadin and a few others, they're putting in all new champions as well, including some first-timers to TFT. I know some people are really excited, for example, the return of Gnar and Nautilus, but Teemo finally makes his way into TFT through the PBE. Sox, did you get a chance to actually play PBE at all today?
I have not. I saw it just came right. This is the first thing I did right off of work, so I have not played PBE, but I am super excited to play PBE, though.
I was pretty surprised when Teemo wasn't in the initial lineup, so I always assumed that he was coming at some point in time because, I played League of Legends way back in the day. He was like the first space theme skin. So I just when they announced Galaxies, he was immediately where my mind went to. So,
but I'm assuming he's good. It's very difficult to come up with a Teemo ability that's relevant in TFT, and even the current ability is like it's like questionable, like how relevant it could be, right? So we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of balance patches that could go through the PBE, both announced and stealth. So, you know, right now, like day one testing, there's definitely some champions that they're looking at. But they added some new traits. One of them we just scrolled past was called Battlecast, which is like every 10 seconds, based off the state of their health, they either deal damage or heal. It's a little bit, it's pretty dynamic, right? And shows you like based on how the battle is panning out. You can end up sustaining yourself or putting out even more damage. And some of these Battlecast units are just really good. Like right now, the first impression is that Victor is like super powerful and Cassiopeia is like a very reliable tier 3 carry. And then Urgot, of course, if you're able to get him, just kind of really messes people up every time he casts his ability. So individually, the Battlecast units look good. The synergy itself, I'm still not exactly sold on it. I was actually playing a lobby with Mort. And Mort was playing all battle casts, and like for the first half of the game, he was like completely dunking on everybody. And then the second half, it kind of fell off a cliff. So I'm not sure if that was, you know, transition or itemization. There's a lot of questions, but I'm not sure on how battle cast is right now. And the second one is Astro, which is kind of like a Star Guardians-esque type of thing. It's like discounting your mana by 30 if you get three of them, and it's like a static trait similar to what Mana Reaver used to be. And so that also, like, I'm not sure how good it is because every time I went for like Astro as my core, it ended up kind of disappointing. I just end up playing these units individually, but of course, it's just like a day one impression. I'm not really
right.
Sure. I had a question about Astro, which is since it discounts your max mana, right? I'm assuming it's max mana. Doesn't that make it like not just discounting mana for the first cast, but every cast subsequent as well? So I feel like there's a lot of room to play with there.
Yeah, there's definitely something there. Just like I couldn't really find anything reliable, especially for people like Gnar, who like you just cast that one time and you just transform. So
does it consecutively lower every time?
No, it's like
I think it's just 30 less off of whatever. So if it's 100, it goes down to 70.
And then yeah, permanently, right? It's not going to go cheaper and cheaper.
Yeah.
Okay.
But the units themselves are really fun. Nautilus, I was, you know, watching Scar stream. Nautilus is like kind of is a pretty it's a unit, you know. Yeah, Nautilus, if you prepare him correctly and position him well, can do something really fun, kind of like what Cho'Gath does. Bard itself is like a really unique champion. So Bard, whenever Bard casts their ability, it gives you a meep on your bench that you can sell for EXP. And every time that happens, so if Bard casts four times in a battle, you'll get four EXP that you can sell on your bench. And so there was one game where I got Bard during the PvE round at 1-2 because off of a
boost. Oh.
And I just hit five like way faster than everybody else. While everyone else was still like, you know, like either just hitting level four or trying to level to four. And so there's some really interesting stuff happening with some of these champion designs, which I'm not sure. Like, I can't tell if Bard is like god tier or just like bait.
Froden, I mean, there was a lot of lobby 2 theorists about Bard, but like, I'm very interested in Bard myself. But like, for example, can Bard proc his ultimate during the Krug round?
Yes.
So you can farm like 5 or 6 creeps during the Krug round.
Yeah, like if you play like all tanks, so you take forever, and then you stack mana items on the bar, and then you get like 3-4 EXP.
In theory, say you get like 5 or 6 meeps and you don't kill a Krugs, would that be worth it, right? It probably would.
I don't know.
I mean, you have 45 seconds to farm meeps. That's so long. Imagine a Spear of Shoujin on him. That's actually like, that's probably like upwards of 10 to 11 meeps, honestly. So that's something I'm excited to test out.
That's actually super fasting. I hadn't thought about that.
There was a lot of theories about how to efficiently farm meeps. But I mean, based on your day one impressions, has anyone tried it?
I think people have understood that if they pick it up early game, it's good. And then after that, they don't pick them up at all. So it's kind of like with at stage 2, like if you find Bard at all in stage 2, you keep, but like stage 3, you kind of just want to play like more substantive stuff because, you know, that's when you start snowballing and that's when your damage starts to ramp up. So you want to preserve your health because Bard just as a unit otherwise is just kind of like a health sponge, doesn't really do much during the actual battle. And the Mystics, even if you splash in 2, it still doesn't have nearly as profound of an impact as it does in the later stages of the game, it feels like.
So speaking of Mystic, there is one more trait that's been added to the game, Froden, if you want to discuss that.
Oh, yes, Paragon, right, with Janna?
Yeah.
This one is so interesting because every time I've played Janna, I've won the lobby. But I can't tell if it's because I was just high-rolling or because it's actually really good. But Janna's ability is super nutty because Paragon, what it does is it's exactly what it says. It turns all your basic attacks into magic damage. So people who prioritize Vanguard, for example, Vanguard Sniper is something that people are testing a lot right now because there's a lot more snipers, a lot more Vanguards to try to mix and match. And so Janna like helps you like counterplay that a little bit. But it didn't really feel like the basic attacks converting damage mattered as much, nearly as much as her ability, which is like this board-wide AoE. Except she can also miss. So it's kind of like Misfortune. It puts in a cone, but like if an infiltrator jumps behind you and Janna chooses to ult to the side, and like completely, like all her AoE just goes into like one little square on the board, and then like the rest of the board doesn't get impacted at all. So you gotta be really careful. Positioning does matter a lot with Janna, which of course Sox is excited to hear.
I am excited to hear that.
Yeah.
I wonder what this will do for Star Guardians, because she's also a Star Guardian, and I feel like Star Guardians just eventually didn't really take off.
I would say that if you play Janna, the 3-star Guardian is like really important. Like I actually tried playing her just as like, you know, individually good 2-cost legendary unit, and it was okay. And then the moment I started putting like Soraka and I put in just like a generic like Star Guardian in, she started popping off and cast.
Yeah, I assume her ability takes a lot of mana to activate.
Yeah, I put also Shoujin and stuff on her. It's kind of the same thing. Like when you get like that Lulu effect where it just starts to cast all the time, you just start to overwhelm your opponent with CC.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Sox, what are your initial impressions on... We talked a little bit about Astros, but do you have any thoughts on Battlecast or Paragon?
I mean, I just have a few questions about Battlecast. That's it. I mean, I think the ability's not like super exciting or not like super innovative. But the questions are like, for example, does Cassiopeia, does the poison, is each dot for poison, does that count towards the damage? Count towards the damage going towards Battlecast? So if she has like 4 units poison, she'll be activating Battlecast like every other second. Stuff like that. Nothing jumps out besides I have to try it, so I'm not quite sure.
Well, we have more in Twitch chat, so maybe he'll be able to answer that question.
Still paying attention.
Oh. Maybe more can add it. There's a couple of really just like exciting champions. Also, I think most people are really.
I just crafted it. That means like Cassiopeia is probably the best user of Battlecast, right? By a huge margin. And then the other things like does Red Buff and Morello count? In that case, like the way to build Battlecast is to stack these items, not to actually build like conventional tank items, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that it does count. Wow.
And I think that's like a priority.
Oh, Shiv is 5 instances of damage, according to more in the Twitch chat. Wait,
that's crazy.
I'm super excited. I'm super excited to try this now because now, yeah. like, I understand like how to truly optimize this.
And I think it's really exciting because one of the criticisms in this set was that a lot of the 3-cost units, the tier 3 units, felt like none of them could truly carry. You had like good support or tanky stuff like Jace or Kassadin, but it didn't really feel like there was many 3-cost worth building around compared to 4-costs or, you know, 3-starring stuff. So, you know, Cassiopeia, Vayne looks really powerful early on in the day one impression because the dropping aggro is really important. And so it's cool, right? It gives you multiple avenues to try and build a composition as opposed to just like either all-inning and trying to roll all your gold down to get this these 1 or 2 cost to 3-star, or just like all-inning your gold and hoping you hit a tier 4 unit and then trying to 2-star them afterwards. And I think tier 3 is really important to have those carries.
I'm very excited because this is very reminiscent of set 2 where the bulk of the carries are 3 costs. So I'm really excited for like the Aegon Shadow roll down to happen again. The Aegon Shadow 3-2 roll down.
Oh, yeah. God.
Super excited.
Mort, if you're here, I was watching passively on Skara's stream something where whose ult was it that just countered GA and Guardian Angel didn't activate?
It's Urgot for sure. I've seen it like a million times at this point. Urgot destroys anything. It doesn't matter.
It's not a bug, he said.
Yeah, it's not a bug, yeah.
It's also insane.
It's also how Urgot works in League, I believe. So it's very consistent.
Yeah. that's wild.
Urgot is pretty powerful. I tried a lot of Urgot Janna combination. Overall, it just, you know, seemed very strong.
I'm very excited about Gnar coming back because I think Gnar is maybe my favorite character, favorite unit in all of the TFT sets that we've seen. It reminds me a lot of my favorite unit, and we were talking about Auto Chess earlier, was Kunkka, because it just felt so dramatic when the ship hit and just stunned everything. And I played so much Shapeshifter in set 1, and just like all those moments where Gnar just like jumps and then stuns everything feels so great. And it was actually one of the things I missed the most in set 2, and there's a little bit of that in set 3 with like, I don't know, Gangplank and stuff, but I'm really excited to have him back in set 3. I think it's going to be cool.
I'm very excited for Gnar as well. Super excited. I think it's also like one of the most requested units. I know that Kurum wants him all the time. He's like, oh, can we get Gnar back. So really excited.
Yeah, I think a lot of people are really excited about Riven as well. Riven is one of the like feature champions in the announcement blog post, and she hadn't been ported over to TFT yet from League of Legends Summoner's Rift. She doesn't seem that good right now, unfortunately. In terms of like at least a unit to worth committing like full items to try and like prioritize. But you know, maybe again, it's like the early game build. She's a Chrono Blade Master, so she should conventionally fit with like Shen and a couple of other units, but you know, maybe the itemization or the comps haven't been fleshed out yet, but I would love to see Riven be a little bit stronger, especially since she's kind of like replacing Kayle, so to speak.
Yeah.
And I, you know, Kayle was such a great unit, both just in the cool factor and also just being very flexible. And so right now I think people are comparing Riven to I actually forgot what I read, but people just said like Riven was kind of underwhelming at first, which is a little bit disappointing, but I'm sure they'll probably tweak her a little.
Riven reminds me of Irelia. So when I first played the game, I thought Irelia was just garbage. And then as I played more and more, I realized that Irelia is actually really good. So maybe we'll find something similar to like a Irelia build for Riven, and then like she'll be pretty good as well. So not sure.
I mean, she has 25 mana as a requirement to cast her ability, and she gets a shield, and she gets to do some really cool stuff. So, like, there's got to be, like, a build that abuses that fact, because that's such a low mana requirement. It's absurd.
What do you guys think of the mech nerfs? I think it's a 30%. The pilots come out 30 with 30% less health.
I haven't actually seen anyone play mech yet. I think everyone's probably, like, on a... you know, honor agreement, like a gentleman's agreement, so to speak, in the lobbies that I'm playing that no one plays.
It's interesting because I know a lot of people speculated that when they heard the certain synergies were getting removed, that mech would be one of the ones that would get removed. And it's just it's interesting because it didn't, but I'm very curious how it'll work now with the units coming out with so much damage.
I mean, I think it's a lot more healthy the way it is implemented now than the way it was implemented before, right? Because the way it was implemented before, the mech buff was essentially doubling your entire team's HP, right? In addition to doubling your entire team's HP, it was actually doing a ton more damage, like in the fact that it has the mech unit. Now you're no longer doubling your entire team's HP. You're getting the mech, which is pretty much like a percentage of your health, and then the extra 30% health from your units.
Well, so they also said that all the units and the mech are getting buffs. So I'm very curious if like now it'll switch from just stacking health and tanky stuff to actually like trying to murder their whole team before your mech dies, for instance, by stacking a ton of damage or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I like the direction. And I do understand why they didn't take out the mech. Which is like, when set 3 was announced, I was like, holy shit, this sounds so fucking cool. I'm so excited to play mech. And then after playing like mech for like 2 months, I'm like, okay, I hate this shit. But then you have to imagine the people who haven't been playing like set 2 like every single day for like 2 months. They're probably like, oh my god, mech is so cool still, you know? So... It's like a cool.
No, I mean it's cool. Definitely it's like one of the more iconic builds from this set. So I totally get it. Aurelion Soul fighter ships now drain enemies' mana. Do we know if it's significant or not?
Some people have been trying reroll rebel compositions because they're really excited about Zed. Zed is like a new rebel infiltrator, and part of the rebel like rework for this mid-set expansion was to not just encourage people to clump rebels and then AFK for a while to kind of like get them thinking about more unique positioning. So Zed being an infiltrator and a rebel is kind of unique. And then he like steals AD from their whatever target it is. However, I haven't seen anyone really like use Aurelion Soul as like some kind of impromptu mana reaver thing. So I had a question about
Aurelion Soul, which is, does his stealing mana scale with AP? Because if it does, that's pretty funky. You can imagine
Mort says no.
Very broken about
I don't
that.
Think so. Yeah, it doesn't sound like it would.
Mort says no.
Okay.
Yeah.
It does not.
Yeah. I will say on this list of changes, Echo seems to be much more effective. Whenever like my opponents would itemize Echo and get in the 2-star, I actually felt like a legitimate threat now instead of just like a finisher, because like Echo always kind of put a little bit of damage, but not that much. Now I feel like Echo's like in a better place. And cybernetic in general is like way more consistent because now you don't need Echo because you have Vayne as like a sniper cybernetic to help you bridge that gap. And so cybernetics, I think, are like back on the menu in terms of just being a very solid comp, still good early game as usual, and also can like scale nicely into the late
game. What about Machine Gun Syndra? Because now one of the changes is extra orbs go to another target. And that was actually for about 5 seconds, I really enjoyed playing Machine Gun Syndra for a bit, and I don't know. Yeah. I think that would be quite fun to do a bring back.
Yeah, so one thing that they changed was Seraphs is no longer like really the thing.
Yeah,
it's blue buff. So blue buff after you cast your ability sets your mana to 20, and that means that you can't stack blue buffs and then get like 40 mana or 60 mana if you get two or three of them. So that Machine Gun Syndra build, I think, is like effectively dead. And they also nerfed Chalice to not give mana printing anymore. So you can't really machine gun them.
What if you just spread the blue buffs out to different Star Guardians?
Okay, that's an interesting thought. What do you think, Sox?
I mean, I super like that. I mean, there's a big change that I don't think was listed here is the Star Guardian bug fix, right? So I think it's actually legitimate to say a Machine Gun Syndra build does exist. So
okay. Interesting.
The bug fix was that the Star Guardians, after each cast of the Star Guardians, they used to give 50 mana, and then the second cast would give 25 mana to all Star Guardians, then the next cast would give 12.5, and then every subsequent one would half the mana given. So with that bug fix gone, I mean, Travis has a really good point that the new Syndra build could probably be really strong.
Yeah.
And I actually do agree.
Yeah, I think probably.
And you get another Star Guardian in Janna, so that's kind of cool. Yeah.
I would say that the reason why I probably haven't seen much of that is because most of the sorcerer builds tend to revolve right now around Victor, just because he's so insanely strong right now. And I guess that's probably why people haven't been prioritizing that. But if he becomes more in line with how the tier 4 unit should be, maybe we end up deducing.
After Hotline League tonight, I'm going to go do PBE Syndra builds and see what I can do as a lowly player. All right. What else is in here that we're really excited about? Because I know maybe we've got another 5 or 10 minutes before we need to move on to the second half of the show.
The one that that has sparked a lot of debate, at least for me and some of my friends, is the units now sell back for their full value. So that one is a big, big, big change, right?
Oh, wow.
So, Froden, I mean, so far, what was your impression on it based on playing it, playing on PB?
Honestly, it actually didn't change as much as I thought it would be, because I guess maybe our rolling habits haven't adapted to it. But like, people, again, still go through like periods of where they're never rolling or they're rolling everything. And if you're choosing to roll down like a lot of your gold, you're often trying to target certain buckets. You're not just going to like, I mean, I guess what it helps you do is you don't have to think nearly as much about your roll down because you can always just sell. So you can actually just keep buying everything and then sell it back for full value. So I didn't actually feel that big of an impact. There was one moment where I found a 3 Zed shop and I was playing sorcerers. So I just bought them and played them for 1 round and then won it and sold it. That felt really good. So overall, I was pretty happy with that specific instance, but it hasn't actually come up as much as I thought it would be. What it actually does do in the late game is actually surprisingly, if you go for a thresh build, it feels like it actually gives you a lot of utility specifically for that. Because part of the issue is like, if you decided to buy stuff and 2-star them for like thresh, you kind of like gimp your chances of finding what you're actually looking for when you're rolling down. But like, I can actually buy like a 2-star epic, like a Soraka, and not feel bad for leaving her on the bench, because I could just sell her for 12 gold later and get it back on the next turn. Yeah. So it actually created some utility scenarios that I wasn't really expecting in the late game, which was was a pretty neat discovery.
Have they talked about why they made that change? Because it's a pretty fundamental change to the way that the game has worked and I mean, genre has worked for a long time.
So Mordog brought this up in the Lobby 2 Discord, which was the fact that right now, if say 3 people are going for mech, if 2 people pivot out and sell their 2-star Annies, they're actually at a gold disadvantage for making the technically correct choice of pivoting. In this case, the person who didn't pivot gets a gold advantage in addition to, you know, whatever other advantage they have. So by removing that sellback penalty, they essentially promote pivoting and playing like adaptively.
Yeah. I should be rewarded for just like a tyrant or a bull just charging straight in, even though other people are going the same way. You know, they should be at a disadvantage for pivoting because I was the person who decided to have the boldness to stay where I was.
It reminds me of when I used to play League and there was no roles. The first person to type me mid in chat first gets mid. Yeah. I mean, that's just the rules, right? you can't argue with the rules. It is what it is. Whoever types me mech first gets mech.
Yeah.
So I also have an opinion on the full sellback value, which is, like, for example, in the current patch, I would never, ever even look at a Master E or even think about making a Master E 2 just because, like, even if it makes my board stronger, it's just not worth a gold investment. But with this current new system, there is a good chance I would just randomly make a Master E2 and be happy with making a Master E2.
Does this...
It opens more avenues.
Yeah. Does it also open up easier griefing of other people? Or at least, like... like you can take their shit easier now, right? Somebody else is going mech.
Theoretically, yes.
We can finally take Milk's Rumble we can make a 2-star Rumble and grief Milk without, like, having the penalty. I'm super excited, man.
Exactly. Yeah.
Wow, Mort is on another level compared to us. Oh my god.
Every patch is just a piss off Delicious Milk. I like it. Overall, I think that this change, the more people, like, I think right now no one's really thinking about it. Right now everyone's just trying to understand what champions do and what the new synergy means. But then we start applying things like the econ behind TFT, one of the most intricate and like fluid concepts in the game or mechanics in the game. I think this is going to be a much more contentious issue moving forward because I'm sure people are going to find ways to abuse this. I'm also kind of intrigued that they're kind of tinkering with numbers, like tier 3 champion pool has now increased, and also like you can always Nico's help no matter what. which is, I guess, good because it always sucks to get Nico, then you can't do anything with it. No, but it seems like it's easy to hit now.
I was going to say, it seems like they've made changes to make it easier for people to get the stuff that they want and less have and have less of those moments where it's like, oh, wow, I just could never find this one thing. How frustrating.
But also, I'm pretty sure for the Nico's help one, I'm pretty sure they've received like many, many bug support tickets. They're like, oh, the Nico's help. I'm 99.9% sure that's why they fixed this issue.
So. With a player base of millions, you know, maybe they probably encounter tens of thousands of bugs.
Is this the first the player support went to the designers and just begged them, please, this will say we'll be able to hire three less people this quarter if we could do this.
That's funny.
Well, they removed Lilac Nebula.
I think yes. All the sweaty players can finally praise it.
I mean, Lilac Nebula was my favorite nebula, as everyone should. This is a meme at this point. Lilac Nebula sucks as favorite nebula. So I'm a little sad about that, but that's okay. That's okay.
Anything else big in this patch that we need to discuss? I mean, obviously, it's day one, so we're just giving initial impressions. I'm sure there'll be so much more to discuss 2 weeks from now, but.
I like that rapid fire can't miss anymore. Dodge kind of became somewhat of a problematic thing, actually, in like low key, one of the more problematic mechanics in the set because it just like nullified certain abilities. Like you would kind of wait for this iconic moment where your ability go off and then like dodge. So I like that rapid fire cannon gives you some counterplay to that because there really isn't any counterplay to dodge except for like just don't play a champion that requires you to land attacks, which wasn't. It's not really like legitimate counterplay, so I like that small little thing. But nice quality.
Anything else in this patch that you're really excited about?
I think that's covered it for me so far.
Okay. Good. Well, hey, I'm happy we got through this whole thing because I was a little worried. It's so much to talk about.
Yeah.
But let's move on to esports. My favorite topic, actually, maybe the. Past patch was my favorite topic, but a lot of drama happening in the esports world right now.
Oh yeah,
specifically around Team Liquid. I don't know if you guys heard, but they traded Double Lift to TSM, and there's some questions about so they ran
that drama you're talking about in the Riot IP world. Okay,
yeah, sorry, I'm doing that other show later tonight. I get these mixed up sometimes. Team Liquid has drama in multiple esports. It's hard to keep up. So, some interesting things happened where they did the open bracket, and then there were issues with that. So then they made changes to try to make it so that the high end players could get in. And then their tournament bot here, so they've said there's a glitch in the tournament bot that seeded challengers and GMs and everybody against each other. So they all started getting eliminated. And Sox, I heard you you got caught up in this a bit.
I did. My first lobby was literally take the top eight challengers from the NA ladder. And put them into one group. And that was my lobby. And I got six that game. And I was just like, okay, this is bullshit. And it was really embarrassing. Because I high-rolled my game. And I was just like, oh, I'm going to get first for sure. And I totally underestimated my opponents. Because I was like, I've never played against opponents this strong before. So I just instantly died. It was really embarrassing.
Yeah, so for people who don't know, the Team Liquid qualifiers, they seed for the TFT Championships that's happening for Set 3. And so Riot has, you know, empowered third-party organizers, which is, you know, theoretically a good move for the grassroots organization, especially since, you know, we're still kind of getting set with the way esports should be for TFT. No one really knows how it should be.
Let's be clear. I consider Giant Slayer TV a grassroots organizer. I'm not sure if I consider Cloud9 and Team Liquid to be grassroots organizers, but sure.
The way it's ran is very grassroots. Actually was ran very similar to QIHL. Worse.
Right? Like if you're
right in terms of what it should represent, but
right, yeah, like if you okay. Yeah. If for say like Joe's Land Center in Pomona, California decided to run some TFT tournament. That's a great grassroots situation. Maybe there's some great excuses around it being, you know, having some issues. Whenever you're saying Team Liquid, who is one of the premier organizations and companies in esports, I don't know if sponsored by Jersey Mike Subs. If they are the ones doing it, I tend to think that's less grassroots. And in my opinion, there's less room for these types of fuck ups.
I will be fair to them. I would say that first, people vastly underestimate how difficult it is to run a 512 player tournament in games like TFT. Being a person that's also organized large scale TFT events that you have competed in, Travis. So it's very tough. So my sympathy goes out to people who have labored a lot just to see it blown up in their face because of a error in the Discord bot, apparently. But for context, Team Liquid decided to host this open qualifier, and apparently they didn't necessarily seed anybody. So you had a lobby of Soju, Sox, Jinx, Solus, Natures, Cotton, Hawkins, and Data Cat, all like players who are like bare minimum on the door of Challenger, also players who are in the top five of Challenger. So it was like absurd. And then you have lobbies of people who are like gold to platinum. And then the second round was pairing everybody based off similar results. So everybody that got first in a lobby all played each other. Everyone that got fourth in a lobby all played each other. So there was definitely some matchmaking issues. But the problem with this qualifier wasn't the fact that these things happened. It was that Team Liquid had an opportunity when they organized it to say, hold on, we're going to delay the tournament just to make sure we get all the seedings right and rearrange it. Sorry for the delay. They chose to proceed with the tournament anyways. And after two rounds of play, after enough complaints had been kind of filed and they investigated and found the issue, they decided to say, sorry, after two rounds of play, no longer will this qualify for the TFT Championships, and we're just going to turn into a cash cup, in which case a lot of people just quit right after that happened. And so, you know, kind of like having some people really invested like 2, 3, 4 hours of their day, and all of a sudden, you know, it didn't count anymore. And it kind of actually affected one of my friends, Bryce Blum, who's like a full-time, you know, runs an esports law firm in esports. And he like took a day off to try to qualify. He got first and second in his lobbies, and then all of a sudden just like didn't count anymore. And he's like, wow, I just like lost all my motivation to like compete for this set. And that really sucks, you know. Like, there's a lot of people that are similar to that, where they like really take the time to try and set aside to qualify, and then, you know, this is like a really big damper in their spirits.
Yeah.
Again, I totally sympathize with how difficult it is to run, you know, from one tournament organizer to another. But like that, this is like something that's like absolutely embarrassing to like
I happen. Think my disappointment is that it feels as though Riot has been sort of pushing off the obligations of handling all these types of tournaments to teams in a lot of cases. And you're right. Like, I feel bad for the specific individuals who probably spent a lot of time trying to make this tournament happen. But I'm a little disappointed that, like, look, Riot could run the stuff, or Riot could partner with people and companies and organizations whose core competency is running tournaments. And I do not think that esports organizations, their core competency are running tournaments, right? Like, I think that's part of my frustration. I'm curious, would Twitch do run one of these? Because I mean, you guys have run, you've run giant ones, right? Like the ones that the one I competed in last year at TwitchCon. Like, is this something you guys would invest into and do something with?
I mean, theoretically, yes. Twitch and Riot actually do a lot of things. We did like the Legends of Runeterra thing recently with the launch event, and Valorant. We've been doing lots of events with that. League of Legends, and it's been a while. It's been a hot minute since we've done TFT, and I would love nothing more, because TFT is currently my favorite Riot game. But you know, obviously, we haven't really done much with it lately. So I think we have the capacity to do it. It's really up to Riot if they want that to happen.
I just I'll end my little grandstand speech here by saying, like, I really like TFT esports. I think doing the show has been really fantastic for me, and I feel like it's been really cool to meet all the different folks who are eager to come on this show, unlike League of Legends pros who all make way too much money and now have turned into divas and don't come on my shows. And so I would love to see Riot give this community a little bit more love than they do. And I think instances like this, like, ultimately, you know, Team Liquid should take some of the blame, but I think a lot of this ladders up to the way that Riot is deciding to run this stuff. And they have I think they could just do a lot more and partner with people who are more competent at this. So that's my frustration there.
The last thing I want to say, I completely agree with what you say. And again, much love to Team Liquid for even trying this in the first place. It's very ambitious. But I will say that Riot is hiring somebody for TFT Esports lead. It was like a job listing that was posted by Whale and his crew a while ago. So I believe they're at least trying to organize or find the right person to help run it. But yeah, definitely, like, there's a need for Riot to step up if they really want to, like, answer the demand there. Because there's a lot of people that want to compete in this game. For sure.
They actually, I know somebody who used to work at Riot Esports who loves TFT and is doing it full time now. He seems like the perfect hire for that position. So, that Derek Asiju joke. Anyway, okay. he went
yes.
full time.
People just say to hire delicious milk to run it. Yes. What do you think, Sox?
That would be terrible
to run TFT Esports.
That would be a terrible idea.
No, milk would be amazing. You already know, dude.
All right. Sorry, Sox. Do you have any thoughts on any of this tournament stuff? I know that I've just kind of hogged the mic for a bit.
Honestly, I don't have too many opinions on the tournament. I think it's actually very, very difficult to qualify through the Team Liquid tournament. So props to anyone who can do it, because I certainly can't.
Yeah. Well, okay. Other than that, there's the C9 tournament. Do we have anything we want to talk about regarding that?
No, we don't know too much about it, but I think that this Open has kind of demonstrated the difficulty of it, especially with no like tournament support in the client. It's pretty much just inviting people with friends and or like inviting them into normal lobbies. So, you know, perhaps this is like a case in point of why invitationals have been like the main way TFT tournaments have been happening, because it just looks very difficult to organize it logistically. And so this one's coming up. Hopefully it's run really well.
Yeah. All right. I think we've got enough time to do two little games here. We're going to move on to Sock Positioning Quiz, which I will fail dramatically and lose all credibility and not be invited to host the show anymore.
There's no correct answer. There's just wrong answers, though.
What?
Great.
Great. Thrilled about this. Okay, so I don't have great insight into how we're going to handle the logistics of this, but I do know that, Sox, you've talked to the Giant Slayer production staff, and we're going to figure this out.
Is essentially going to take over as host of the show, similar to what Mort did last week. Sox is going to present to us opportunities to flex our knowledge on positioning, because, you know, as people know, Sox has been coaching a lot of people, and the number one thing that he likes to point out is what people can do better for positioning optimization. So now it's Travis's and my turn to find out how bad we are actually at this.
Okay, so some background. Wait, do we click the next slide? How does it work?
Yeah,
the production person will handle
it. Feel free to explain the game.
Okay, so basically, for a lot of positioning, I think my background is I say that almost every single person just autopilots and don't actually think about why they position the units in the way they do. So my whole thing is, if you can just give me a positioning that you guys can agree on, and then just give me the pros and cons of why you have that positioning, and talk about like how you got there, and if it's reasonable, I think that counts as a win. But if it's if it's something that can be improved, I'll have an incorrect solution slide, and I'll have a correct solution slide, and I'll talk about why the incorrect solution is like kind of incorrect, why the correct one is correct.
Okay.
So the first question is indeed like they're all early game positioning. Nothing super complicated. And it's just Leona, Poppy, and TF. How would you position these?
Oh, so how many questions, by the way? Because I'm trying to figure out how quickly.
I have three. Okay. And they're all very simple. They're all just something simple as this.
So here's what I would do in this situation, Frodan. And you tell me if I'm wrong, and then we'll submit whatever.
I tell you.
I would make I don't think you and I are competing, right? Okay. We're to get on the same team as Blaze Fox have to see. Yeah, this is co-op. I would make like a V, essentially. I would
what does that look like?
Leona and Poppy with on the front line with a space between them, maybe two spaces between them.
Okay.
I'd move Leona up on that so she's in the front line, both of them.
Front line, row one.
Yeah, yeah. And then maybe over a little bit, so we make a V. And then I would stick TF on like row three, sort of in between them. Because, yeah, maybe I'd shift all that over.
It's a squishy unit that you would want in the back.
Well, and so also his ult kind of like, you know, that goes out
and hits multiple.
Yeah, so it hits the people that are fighting Poppy and Leona. This is my thought on this.
I think this is too weak to an early Blitzcrank, and I also think it's very vulnerable to Infiltrator, and TF is like all of our damage, so if we want to win fights, we have to protect TF a little better. So, you know, there's been some conventional logic, like for example, you can put Leona in the corner, and then like another suggested one that a lot of people do is Leona in the corner, Twisted Fate would go back right next to Leona, and then Poppy would kind of be like in a position above Leona, maybe making a little triangle, or you can put Poppy to the right of Twisted Fate as well. And the logic behind this is that it's like protecting against Blitzcrank. If you put Poppy to the other side of TF, you actually protect them against Infiltrators as well. And they all engage around the same time anyways, although you do lose a little bit of like that AoE cone that you were talking about. So Poppy would be on the other side of TF. So kind of like a nice Twisted Fate sandwich. All in the same row. So this is like what I've been seeing a lot and what I've been doing myself. And so I would suggest one of these two positions.
Yours is better than mine. Well, let's go with yours to submit.
Okay.
I mean, this is the positioning I have been suggesting to a lot of people. So actually, this position got pretty popular just in the last 2 or 3 weeks as I've been streaming and doing this positioning almost every single fight. And the incorrect one I put on the left, on the right side. And it's virtually been all the positioning that people have done for ever since the start of the set. And then I wanted to briefly discuss like why the left one was correct. So the first one was TF is Blitzcrank immune. The good is that TF is pretty much immune to Kha'Zix. TF is pretty much immune to Kha'Zix. But the bad one is that what's called for the incorrect one, Poppy actually joins the fight very, very late for no reason, and Leona's her solo aggro tank. And then in this case, there's absolutely no reason why Leona should be your solo tank, right? Because you can have both of them engage the enemy at the same time. And then also the last good is that all your units essentially focus the same unit. So for this case, this is, you guys obviously got it correct, and you guys have very good reasoning behind it.
Yes, we had very good reasoning. I thought we had great reasoning.
Logic.
But, okay, let's move on to the next question, which is something very, very similar. And it's essentially the exact same question, but instead of Poppy and Leona, you have to position Malphite and Blitzcrank.
All right. I went first last time, so Froden, why don't you go first this time?
So for a big portion of the set, the way I used to position was put Blitzcrank in the corner. We can just let's take the other corner here, bottom right, for example. And then I would play like Malphite a little bit up, like row 2, position 2. Yeah. And then I played like TF either above Blitzcrank or next to Blitzcrank. But one thing that I actually saw some player do, which I thought was really clever, was put Blitzcrank to the right of Twisted Fate, and then Malphite to the left of him. So you do the same Twisted Fate sandwich, but by doing this, what ends up happening is you pull the unit in with Blitzcrank anyways. In fact, you can actually manipulate this to put Blitzcrank in the middle so you keep the left-right ambiguity really high. And then Twisted Fate still gets to get his cone off, but then Malphite walks up and splits the aggro, so that way Blitzcrank isn't solo tanking, or Malphite isn't solo tanking. So, and you're also still protected against Infiltrators. And I thought when I saw this, when someone did it to me because I was playing Kha'Zix, I was like, wow, this is like one of the smartest things I've ever seen in this game. And I wouldn't be surprised if it actually originated from Sox's tips here, because I think that's kind of what he's been pioneering for his position.
Honestly, Ferdinand, I am shocked to say that is all the stuff I was about to say, and this is the exact positioning I was going to come up with. Oh my gosh, that's crazy. It's unfortunate you went first, because then you would have seen how we had the same exact take. So let's submit this.
So yeah, this is definitely the positioning I've been preaching for about, like, I'll say also another 2 weeks. I think this is way superior. For the exact same reason, in this case, Blitzcrank and Malphite split aggro. And then, it doesn't, on the left side, after Malphite dies, TF is the next unit to get targeted. On the right side, after Blitzcrank dies, Malphite is the next unit to get targeted, so that is really good. However, there is one major weakness that this position has, and it's a very bad one, actually, which is that it's actually very vulnerable to Gray's Smokescreen, and it's also sometimes vulnerable to Jace as well. So, like, for example, how would you fix that if you were to looking at this board?
To fix the Jace positioning?
The Jace and Smoke, Grace problem.
I would probably move the Blitzcrank up just one. And then leave it like that. I think just because I want to declump things and make sure they're not just like... Because Malphite will always move up, but Twist of Fate doesn't have to if when Blitzcrank pulls.
So that is also very clever. That is one good solution. Unfortunately, if you move Blitzcrank up one, TF can get pulled in a very special scenario. So you can actually move Blitzcrank one to the left as well. So that both of those are like good answers.
Oh, okay. That's
but
cool.
That's just like now you're starting to think of like how I think about this game. Like in this scenario, against a Kha'Zix scenario, what would you do against people clumping on the left side? What would you do against people who are clumping on the right side? What would you do?
By the way, I apologize to all our podcast listeners who this segment has zero value for you, but you can go back and watch this part on YouTube.
Okay, yeah. So then the last question is one that I haven't explained on stream. I actually have never explained on the stream. So I'd be very surprised. How would you position the following? Leona, Twist of Fate, and Caitlyn.
Okay, so...
And I've never explained this on stream ever, so I hope you guys have some pretty good reasoning.
You take a first crack at it.
Jesus, okay. Yeah, can we clear Malphite, TF, and Blitzcrank off the board? Right. Thank you. Okay, well, from what I've learned, a lot of this is focused around Blitz hooks. And so my temptation is to say... Leona in one of the corners, because then she's safe. And then Caitlyn.
Caitlyn's a higher priority as a carry than TF is right now.
So maybe we stick Caitlyn two to the right of Leona, and then TF another two to the right. I mean, it's bad, my answer, but I couldn't bait you into doing it again. so I just this is where we're at. Maybe we move Caitlyn one over and TF one over again.
Okay. So
now you do it the right way, Froden.
Well, the thing is that he set it up in a way that's like, well, this is like something he's never explained before. So I'm trying to like be like answer to that prompt.
Yeah, you're doing
it. There's got to be something pretty unique. So I think this is like at its core, not a bad position to go for. I do wonder if it's like maybe we play the opposite corner. Leona goes in the other corner. Caitlyn goes next to her, and then maybe TF is supposed to stay above somehow, because you're still good against Blitz. No, well, that's a little bit too far up. But like TF against the wall is like a surprisingly underrated thing. No, but then Leona's trapped in. Let's move. Nah, this looks really bad. Let's go with Travis's suggestion here. You would basically put TF bait next to Caitlyn and Sandwicher.
Okay, wait. So before I reveal the solution, let's just briefly discuss this one, right? So if you're trying to avoid Blitzcrank Cook, why would Leona in the corner be better than Caitlyn in this corner, right? Because the enemy can still position their Blitzcrank to hook your Caitlyn.
Right.
So in this case, Leona in the corner has no value. And then against people positioned on the right side, there's a potential Caitlyn can get targeted first. And then finally, against people who are positioned on the left side, their tanks are lined up on the left side, TF and Caitlyn splits aggro. Because sometimes you'll line up two tanks on the left, TF will attack tank one, Caitlyn will attack tank two. So,
right.
So those are the, at least what's going on in my mind when I think about positioning. And then finally, your units are really vulnerable to Graves. As Caitlyn and TF gets blinded by Graves at the same time. So then on the left side, I put a very common positioning, which is, in my opinion, bad. Because with the left side positioning, the enemy Blitzcrank can choose either to grab Caitlyn or TF by positioning their Blitzcrank. On the left side, if Blitzcrank is positioned on the left side, it grabs TF. If Blitzcrank is positioned on the right side, it grabs Caitlyn. So that's a choice that's usually bad. Second, Caitlyn and TF will focus different units if the enemy is clumping on the right side. All right, because you can imagine their tanks in a line. And then, so then the solution for this case is to actually line up your units onto the right side wall or the left side wall. In this case, all three of your units will always focus the exact same unit no matter what. They can only grab TF no matter what. They can only grab Caitlyn no matter what. And you can swap Caitlyn or TF if necessary. And then the last thing is that your units will never get blinded both at the same time. So all three of that makes this a way superior positioning.
Why wouldn't we want TF and Caitlyn swapped in the second picture?
Why wouldn't we want TF and Caitlyn swapped in this? Which
if
one?
If one's T-star and one's not.
Well, oh, I see. Well, because I'm just saying, don't we want TF to get hooked over Caitlyn?
Well, let's just say you're running TF carry. You're running TF with Gunsu's. Then TF is way more important.
Okay.
If you're running Caitlyn carry, then yeah, Caitlyn's way more important. So
yeah, I was going off of the Caitlyn is the more valuable premise for this.
For this one, it's just whatever is less valuable, you put as the Blitzcrank hook. Which one's more valuable, you put as the safer unit. And so that's why this is a better scenario. And the key difference between this question and the question one is that in question one, you had two tanks. In question three, you had two DPSs. And just by changing the very basic premise, you get such a different dynamic positioning. And this is why positioning is so hard. And like, there's no such thing as like the default correct position. And you really have to challenge all the different scenarios in order to really think about the correct positioning.
This makes me want to play the game less. Information. Knowing that there's this just arcane knowledge that I would have to think through in order to play this correctly.
This is not arcane knowledge.
This is insane.
No, this is not arcane. This is something that if you actually thought it through and somebody like told you...
You saw me try to think it through and I gave the worst positioning possible.
No, but somebody told you the things you have to position against. You had to position against left side units, right side units, Graves, Cossacks, Blitzcrank. You would come up with something like this if you just thought about it for long enough. But most people don't think about positioning at all besides to copy streamers. And this is what I really want to push.
Well, I'm limited to what, 10, 15 seconds? What's the time in a turn after I'm done buying my things and deciding what I've got?
No, absolutely. It is very difficult to do that in that limited amount of time. But you're allowed to think about TFT when you're not playing TFT, right? And sometimes, if you want to improve, that's actually the thing you should do. Just actually critically think about why your units are positioned the way they are.
I like
that. My brain can't, without pulling this up in front of me, I can't think about TFT like this in the car or in the shower or something. I need...
You're driving around places?
Yeah, well...
absolutely. Yeah. It's not for everyone, for sure. But this is a segment more towards the people who really, really who are really competitive and they want to get better.
Yeah. I like the segment a lot. I think it's really good. You should definitely do... I know you've been doing some of the stuff, but I feel like you could do a whole weekly thing like this. I think it'd be really good.
It's kind of like brain teasers, but TFT style. I mean, I it makes a lot of sense, exactly what you said. And in the end, it's kind of like something that's a little bit like when you like explain it, it feels fairly obvious. But at the same time, it's kind of like what you're saying. A lot of people don't think about it. So it's very insightful. Thank you.
I think that's about it for the show. And there was more we want to do, but we were already 15 minutes over. So I think that's the struggle. I see somebody highlighting this over and over again, which I assume is Frodan in the show notes.
Yeah,
but
man.
Do you think we can do it in 5 minutes?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Yeah, Frodan, you have the floor.
Of course.
5 minutes, go.
We have to have Sox now that he's ranked 1 and 2. Well, Keon took it just for a brief period of time. But we got to do the NA tier list featuring mismatched Sox. That's right. The top 10 players. for NA. It doesn't have to be in order, but it can be. It's up to you. It's your tier list. So, okay. Sox, give us 10 players for the top players in NA.
I've thought about this for a long time. I think it's me, Milk, and then Gap.
Wait, hang on. We have to type it in. Give a little bit of reasoning on those first three.
I used to think it was Milk and me. I used to think Milk and me were about tied, but I think I feel like my recent position and reasoning for me putting myself over Milk recently was because just for set three, because set three is the latest set, and I feel like that should get a little bit more weight. So that's why I'm putting myself slightly above Milk at the current.
Okay, so then now you want a gap in between Milk and the rest of you, right?
Yeah, I think it's a gap. I think it's a gap.
All right. Okay. Gap and up-and-coming player, apparently.
And then the rest of the players, I think, are pretty even. I think GVA, Ine, Kiyoung, Soju.
Hang on.
Oh, yeah, GV8, Grand Vice.
Grand Vice 8. Ine.
Yeah.
Soju.
Kiyoung.
What am I missing?
So some other players that people have mentioned: Solus, Kiting, Polt.
I think I would put Polt up here as well. And then for
Keen.
And then
truly NA.
And then I feel like there's a gap, and then it's Solus. I do agree with the rest of the group, which is our second gap. Solus.
Kurum.
I think Kurum goes into the gap with Paul Kiyun, Soju, Ine, and GVA. Kurum goes into that group.
We're gonna run out of space with all these gaps you're adding. We do not anticipate.
We can take out the gaps later. We can take out the gaps later. But the gaps are very important players. You need to hit the gaps. And then I think it was Solus. I can't remember who else we were talking about.
How many more do you need? And we only have need one more, and we're already over the 5 minute mark. I think that I
wrote in. I think we're like in minute three.
I think I like if we put Kiting and King into.
You have to pick one or you have to remove one because one.
Oh,
will be
okay. In that case, 11. I keep Solus then.
Okay, you're kicking Solus or
no?
Keeping?
I keep Solus.
Okay,
nice.
And I think this sounds pretty good, honestly. But I think the gaps are important, though. I think the gaps are important.
Well, if we had known that we needed space for gaps, we would have designed this differently.
I'm down to
Milk is asking about Aegon.
Oh no, I forgot about Aegon. Oh no, Aegon's definitely in that group. Oh, I'm sorry, Kiting. And Aegon probably goes probably slightly above Polt.
Okay, so Kiting's off the list, and we're
sorry,
putting
Kiting. It is what it is.
Aegon between Kiyoung and
Polt. That's the second list. Kiting got snubbed from.
He lost to Cartoon Shark. It is what it is. But I honestly should have prepped this ahead of time if I knew you guys were gonna.
You said you were thinking about it.
No.
You said you've thought about it a lot.
I knew my top like 7 or 8, and then it's all muddled. It's kind of all muddled and stuff, you know. But yeah, I like this. I really do wish we can add a little gap, you know? Just maybe even a little half a space bar. Like, it doesn't have to be something... It doesn't have to be dramatic.
Really emphasizing the difference, the player.
Does anyone know how to add half a space bar into something? No, I've never seen that on a computer
shift
before.
Enter usually works pretty well.
Yeah, but that's a full line break.
I think a shift enter usually adds half a line break.
We'll note that. We'll note that next time. Maybe we'll make three columns instead. But this was a great segment. Thanks, Sox, for blowing.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. I'm glad we did it, even though we're running out of time. Brodan, why don't you say any plugs, shout-outs, anything you want to do?
The first thing that I want to say, we didn't get a chance to talk much about it, but Giant Slayer series starts again next week. And we're going to be rolling through the next season while the mid-season update, set 3.5. comes out. So next week starts the event, and then Monday, Tuesdays, and we'll be doing it for about another month and a half or so. And then that'll be like another Giant Slayer series in the books. I'll be casting with Doe, so make sure to tune in.
Sox, what do you want to promote? Where can people find you? What's going on? What's your deal?
I try my best to stream on frequently. I don't really stream that frequently. But I guess I guess follow my stream. I'm very bad at it. I'm sorry, guys. There's not much I can promote.
God, oh my god! I didn't even say what his stream was. Sorry. You've been the most requested coach lately. I've been seeing you coach several people, or at least read that you are. I haven't got a chance to tune into all of them. Are you available for coaching, or are you just doing that out of the compassion of your heart?
I'm just doing it for my friends. I get a lot of coaching requests, but I don't know. It's a lot of work to coach, and I'm not like super excited to coach. It's fun to do it occasionally, but right now it's just too frequent, and it's not really that fun. It's more repetitive than fun. So it's not something you can find. You can't find me as a coach, but you can find my boss as a coach. So hopefully that can help you guys out.
Ooh,
and I don't have any links. I do not have any links, so maybe I should compile one at some point.
All right. So for me, I am literally about to do Hotline League because there was a couple of reasons we couldn't do it on Monday. So we're doing it. I'm doing two talk shows back to back. So if you're watching online live right now, I think they're going to raid my channel, which will be cool. For everyone else, you can follow me on social media. I really like doing the show. It's been really cool. I'm glad that we've been doing it. And I appreciate Sox coming on the show. Really do it. And by the way, go follow Giant Slayer on all their different channels. They've got Giant Slayer TFT on Twitter. Follow the YouTube channel or subscribe to the YouTube channel. Follow the Twitch, et cetera, et cetera. They do some really cool stuff, and I appreciate them putting on the show every week or every other week with us. So thanks so much.
Thank you guys so much for having me.
Yeah, no, it's been super fun. Thanks, Fred, and thanks, Sox. Thanks, Giant Slayer. This is Team Fight Talk Show, done for this 2-week period.